Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today on this fine Thursday with my good friend, Christine Franklin. Christine Franklin, former Washingtonian, now exiled to northern Minnesota.
Don't rub it in.
Her Arctic fastness there in the wilderness.
We have grass now.
Oh, well, that's good. You know, you're moving forward. Soon the temperature will be above zero and it'll all be great.
Yeah.
And, so we're here on this Ascension Thursday, which we'll take a little time and talk about Ascension Thursday. Just kind of catching up. Yesterday, of course, we had to spend like pretty much the whole show, Rod Bennett and I just had to spend time
on the crisis at hand,
talking people down off the ledge, partly, you know, and partly just, you know, looking at what next and how do we get here and all those kinds of things. And we dealt with a lot of that. Rod and I have, different ideas about this, of course. And that's part of the reason that I have co-hosts on the show, because who wants to listen to me monologue like a supervillain? So it's always interesting. Well, that's what supervillains do, right? My plans are coming to fruition.
And,
So we talked about that a little bit, and, you know, my own attitude, which surprisingly has shocked people. I am one of those people that believes that under absolutely no circumstances must Donald Trump ever be allowed in the White House, ever. And if you really sign on to that, of course, what that means is you're okay. Not fantastic. You don't have to be fantastic with it, but you're okay with Hillary winning, because that's what it's going to mean. And so once you've granted that, my attitude basically is, if I had to, I don't have to, because I live in Washington State, where everybody it's already an ultraviolet blue state.
You know, here too, my presidential vote doesn't make a difference.
Right. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how I vote. I don't have to do anything, because I know that my state is going to vote for Hillary Clinton. So I have to, I don't have to, you know, I can sit there while everybody else is hefting that piano up the stairs, and I can sit there and drink my lemonade and watch them do that, because I don't have to help. And which means that I'm free to vote for whoever I like. And since I don't like Hillary either, I can go ahead and register a protest vote against both of them, because I don't like either one of them. But if I was living in a swing state where something was really dependent on my vote, there was really a question about whether or not Trump could win, I would, and I resent the GOP for putting me in this position. Boy, do I resent it. I would feel bound in conscience under those circumstances. And I cannot believe I'm saying this, but it's true. I would feel bound in conscience to vote for. I would feel bound in conscience to vote for Hillary Clinton.
And
Catholics say, how can you possibly feel bound in conscience to vote for abortion? You know, but there's a very simple rationale for this. It's in keeping with the teaching of the church. I'm not saying anything new. I'm repeating what Cardinal Ratzinger has said. And what Cardinal Ratzinger said, he wrote to the American Church in 2004 and said, you can't vote for a candidate who supports grave moral evil in order to support the grave moral evil that they support. So you can't say, man, love Hillary's abortion policies. I'm all in favor of that. I'm voting for her because I want those policies to be enacted. You can't do that because, of course, you're in direct violation of the teaching of the church. You're advocating grave moral evil. But what he does say is, he says, if you have, for example, two candidates whose opinions on abortion are identical, like we have now, you know, if you think for one second that Trump cares about abortion, and if you believe for one second his five different opinions that he's given on abortion, which are basically, they're transparently calculated to please everybody. But in fact, what he has said is A, Planned Parenthood does fantastic work, and B, there should be no change to our abortion law. In other words, he says exactly the same thing as Hillary. Okay, once you grant that, and once you grant the fact that on these moral issues, he's no different than Hillary, the only thing else to look at is what about everything else that he says? And whatever and everything else he says is disastrously more horrible.
I know. It's scary.
Than what Hillary advocates. And so in a situation like that, in order to mitigate even graver evils, Ratzinger says it's legitimate to cast a vote in order to try to limit greater evils. So that's Catholic teaching. And so
yeah,
I would have...
hard, Mark, it's pretty hard to convince people of that because...
Oh, sure.
I've had some, you know, mostly it's just like, you're wrong. You know, you can quote right. church teaching, you can quote, it doesn't matter. You can explain it really carefully. And it's just like, if you let Hillary win, you're like the, from the devil. And
yeah,
it's like,
that's
what?
Not true.
Well, and I live in a blue state and right. I'm going to vote for Abraham Lincoln. That's my protest vote. I'm okay. serious. It's like, yeah. I, the Republican Party is like almost, it's dead. It's like, you know,
oh, yeah,
like it's gasping out its last of what it used to be and yeah. what it stood for. It's a complete, it's on its deathbed. It's on the respirator, time to pull the plug. And
right.
it's like,
well,
I'm
and I
seriously going to, you know,
I don't
live
care.
In a state where my vote would matter at all. I'm not in a swing state. The, right. and it's always a, for, I mean, we voted for Mondale in this state for Pete's sake. So, you know, it was the only blue state in that election was Minnesota. So, I already have decided that I'm going to make a protest vote yep. and people can hate me all they want, you know.
Well, as long as it doesn't go for Trump, that's fine, you know.
You know, I just can't. I can't. For me, I can't in conscience vote for either of them. Mm-hmm. So I know one of them will be elected, and there's nothing I can do. You know, my state's going to vote for Hillary Clinton anyway. So. Yeah. You know, I'm gonna make a protest vote.
Obama gave a gave an address, the annual hilarious address given to the Washington Press Corps, and I got to say the guy has good comic chops. And one of the remarks that he made during the speech was, you know, next year we're going to have a new president, and there's just no telling who she'll be. And
so is Bernie out?
Yeah, there's that's not going to happen.
You know, they said that about Obama too.
Well, yeah, but at this stage, we had a pretty good understanding that Obama was going to take it, and he's gone. You know, it's just not going to happen. He'll continue on for a while doing his thing, but I think he went into this knowing that he wasn't going to win the nomination. But what he was trying to do, and what he succeeded in doing, is driving the conversation. Hillary has repeatedly had to adopt his positions because she recognized that they were popular, and that was the goal was to try to drive
he
that
was
conversation.
Just so cute, I did give him that. It's a cute old Jewish guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He talks like a New Yorker. I mean, it's just it's so cute.
Yep.
Oh,
so anyway,
well.
You know, for me, it's just you know, I try to look at how does the church guide us in doing moral calculus. It doesn't tell us who to vote for, but it tells us what our priorities ought to be.
Yeah.
And at this point, our the first thing that you do is the house is on fire. You have to put the house out. And the way you do that is you keep Trump from becoming president, because that would be
a
catastrophe than the election of Hillary Clinton is going to be. And so you stop that. But then the next question you have to ask is, how do we get here?
Well, and it's our, yes, that's a really good question. And we've done it to ourselves, just like ancient right. Rome did it to itself, just like the Empire Charlemagne did it to itself. It's like we've done right. it to ourselves.
Well, and then the question is, though, you know, how do we strengthen what remains? And the way we strengthen what remains, of course, is by strengthening the Catholic tradition, because the only thing that's still going to be standing, you know, once the United States, sooner or later, it's got to happen because it happens with all mortal things. Sooner or later, the United States is going to get old and die like mortal things do. And the only thing that will still be left standing will be the Catholic Church, of course, because that can't die. You know, so the question is, how do we strengthen what remains? And that means, how do we strengthen our faith as Catholics?
And one of the ways we do that is by putting our mind on heavenly things. That doesn't mean to ignore the earthly things, but to, it's like, what, you know, what's my purpose in life? My purpose in life is to get ready for heaven.
I
don't do that by sweating bullets over elections, because in the great scheme of things, it's it's like a bullet of sweat.
Well, and that brings us to our topic for today, which is Ascension Thursday.
Yeah.
Because that's what Ascension Thursday reminds us of, is the bigger picture.
Set your mind on the things above and not on those things below.
That's right. That's actually, Paul tells the Colossians. And that's what the ascension is about. Which we will return to when we're done. Very important information. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Chris Franklin, and we will be back right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Diddly ho, neighbor. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are back right now here on Connecting the Dots with Chris Franklin. By the way, if you want to join the conversation, please do give us a call. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD-4. 1-573-4-BREAD-4. Please give us a call so that Ethan, our producer, will have something to do and not be just sitting there reading his Archie comic book collection as he normally does.
Try not to yell at us, because we've been getting yelled at a lot in our comm boxes. And today's a feast day.
Just feel free to yell at Chris. Just direct all of your praise to me. No. All complaints go to Chris. All praise to me. happy to receive that.
Dr. Evil.
Anyway, 1-573-4-BREAD-4 is your golden ticket onto the show. And you can tweet us at that number, or you can text us at Breadbox Media. So before the break, we were talking about Ascension Thursday. The Ascension is an important feast in our tradition. And it's more than just kind of, well, the story of Jesus is over now, so he needs to go back to heaven, you know, just to kind of finish up the gospel story. A lot of people don't quite know what to do with the ascension. Some people feel uncomfortable with it because it sounds preposterous to say that Jesus ascended into heaven. Some people the tradition that I was came into as a Christian was a little tiny non-denominational sect that was very uncomfortable with the incarnation, which is a tendency with a lot of heretical sects. There's a real tendency to be uncomfortable with the idea of the humanity of Jesus. And so what I was taught was that when Jesus ascended into heaven, he got rid of his human body and sort of dissolved back into pure spirituality.
Oh my gosh, who thought that up?
Well, wow. Once you understand the background of the group that came up with this, you can actually see how this happened.
It's like Gnostic.
It's exactly what it is.
Wow.
And the reason that the pastor that came up with this thought this was because they were he had been raised in an extremely literalistic, flat-footed, fundamentalist church that taught him, among other things, that the New Jerusalem that you read about in the book of Revelation was it was a big city that was going to fall out of the sky on top of the old Jerusalem and smash it flat, and et cetera, et cetera. And so in reaction to this super literalistic reading of scripture, he decided to spiritualize everything. So he spiritualized Jesus into the ether at the ascension, and then basically maintained that. So what I was taught in addition was that the true second coming was Pentecost. That's when Jesus returned. He returned in the spirit, and that's the only second coming there is. And so weak people need physical things like sacraments. Catholics are weak, so they need things like sacraments. Which is actually true. We are weak, but
we are weak. But you know, it just goes to show that you give somebody a Bible, they can come up with anything.
Right.
That's why we need the church.
Right. Exactly.
That's a perfect example of why we need the church, because you can put the Bible into the hands of people, and they just make stuff up.
Come up with stuff.
Wow.
And so, what the church insists on, the importance of the ascension, is that Jesus did not get rid of his humanity. That's the whole point, that when Jesus goes into heaven, he takes his glorified humanity with us, with him, and that we too are going to enjoy, as the Blessed Virgin already enjoys through her assumption into heaven, in body and soul, that we're going to enjoy what we were meant to enjoy, because human beings are made to have bodies. Yeah. We're not complete without bodies. Right. There's something.
We're not ghosts when we're dead. Yeah.
We're not ghosts. And that's what death does. The idea that somehow losing your body is a purifying experience for a human being is 100% counter to the whole dogma of the resurrection. The whole point of the resurrection is that we're made to be this union of body, soul, and spirit. And that when that division happens, we don't call that purity, we call it death. Which yields two things that are both unnatural, a corpse and a ghost. We recognize that there's something wrong at the sight of a corpse. That is not what we're meant to be. Mm-hmm. And so the ascension is all about that, is all about the assurance that there's already a human being in heaven. His name is Jesus. And he has already given a down payment on the gift of the resurrection to the church in the person of the Blessed Virgin Mary, who has been assumed body and soul into heaven. And so the ascension really is a big deal, because it's telling us that there's a real promise for us of bodily resurrection and ultimately of the new heaven and the new earth, because if you have a body, it has to be somewhere. And that
Jesus, it was witnessed by people, So those people saw with their own two eyes the ascension of Jesus, like they'd seen that he was crucified and then alive. And that all that eyewitness stuff is hugely important, because it's like one of the ways we know something is true is to see it with our own eyes. And people say, "Oh, well, I'll believe it when I see it with my own eyes," you know? Mm-hmm. Well, they did. He showed them.
Right.
And they must have been just, I think, just confounded with awe, flabbergasted, sure. You know? And yet, I saw it with my own eyes. Did you see that? Yes, I saw it. Did you see that? I saw it. We all saw it.
Yeah.
You know? And so they go and start, they wait. Till Pentecost, And then the church just explodes. So it's all part of Jesus giving to us human beings what we need, which is eyewitnesses who have can give worthy testimony. And that's just really cool.
And with that goes something else, which you mentioned before the break, which is that Paul tells us to be big picture thinkers.
Really big.
Really big picture thinkers. And Paul's living in a time, you know, I was talking, when I was talking to Rod Bennett yesterday, he was saying he's getting emails from people who are like, "We're going to nominate Donald Trump. It's the end of all things. We must pray for the second coming before November."
I've seen that. Oh my gosh.
And Paul, you know, is living at a time when Nero is running the entire world.
Remember him. Read your history. I can never stop ranting on read your history.
And Paul is not, you know, Paul certainly believes in the second coming. But he's not. He doesn't look at it as, you know, some kind of an escape hatch from his problems.
Yeah.
So he, strikingly, he believes in hope and urges his disciples to live in hope, not to live in this kind of, you know, well, I hope Jesus comes before November because taxes
frantic
could go
despair.
Up,
you know? Yeah, it's like frantic despair has no place in our lives as believers. It really doesn't, because, you know, every day, or, you know, those of us who pray every day, I prayed the rosary before we came on air, and I kept thinking, you know, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Now, it's not God's will ever that evil be done.
Right.
But he does let us get ourselves into quite a bit of pickle, you know? Right. Well, and I think, do we really believe that? Thy will be done? And for my own self, thy will be done. Can I live in a country where I'm not happy with the government? Well, I already do. You know, can we be a witness in a time when, you know, the Catholic Church is getting more and more, people are getting more persecuted and the laws are changing and the, you know, and there's all this politically correct stuff that's turning into laws. I mean, can we live in this? Well, it's like, we're not the first ones.
Right. And really,
we're certainly not the first ones.
Compared to what Paul and the apostles had to face, man, we're on easy street. Things are still fantastic in this country.
Yeah, we are.
The fact that we're able to have this conversation and no, you know, I don't have people coming to my house and breaking the door down and shooting my family and hauling me away. We're having a conversation on, you know, public airwaves about this. So, you know, sure, things are going south in this country, but man, we still have it just rosy in so many ways. And what's really striking when we see Peter addressing this, Peter is writing his first letter to a persecuted church, probably the church that's being persecuted by Nero. And what's amazing when you see what Peter has to say to a really persecuted church, not like our church in the United States where things are fantastic, is he says absolutely nothing about stocking up on rice and beans and, you know, getting your gun collection oiled and ready, you know, for the final apocalyptic
confrontation. I know, that's just such crazy talk.
Yeah, here's what he says, and this is really shocking to Americans. He says...
Oh, wait for it.
I'll tell you what he says after the break, because then you'll come back.
Come on back.
You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're with Christine Franklin, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hi there. Welcome Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Christine Franklin. If you want to join us, please give us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can also text us at that number, and you can tweet us at Breadbox Media. So here's the thing. We're talking a little bit about how the church took the heavenly view of things. I'm hearing a lot of hysteria and panic this week.
Mm-hmm.
Embarrassing. Firstly, I'm hearing people say, as Rod Bennett put it yesterday, I'm also hearing people, now that Trump is the nominee, we're hearing from the Saruman wing saying, we must join with him, Gandalf. It's like, no, we don't have to join with that guy, right? We really don't have to do that. But we also don't have to have a cow. God forbid, even if the guy wins, God's still in charge of things. Meanwhile, while we're having this, apocalyptic fear festival about things, we hear from the past, we hear the voice of our first pope writing to a church that really is actually suffering persecution. Here in the United States, oh no, my cable is out,
I dropped my cell phone in the toilet. What do we do?
It's the end of all things, And so you see people, Christians who should be trusting God, freaking out and, stocking up on their beans and rice and building their bunkers and oiling their gun collections and getting ready for, the end of things because, their cable rates might go up.
I actually know someone who's doing that. And it has changed this person very much.
Yeah.
Very, very much. It's into toxic. Fearful, worried, prepper, stocking up,
right.
Investing his money in strange things. And it's changed him, and it makes me sad. And there's no talking him out of it.
Yeah,
and he's just been, I don't want to be crude. He's just been drinking the milk of the haters on hate radio.
Right.
It's sad to see because there is nowhere in Catholic teaching, in the Bible, anywhere that says become like this to please God and be happy.
Exactly. And that's
not there.
That's what's so striking. When you read the Gospels, Jesus again and again and again, and this is a man who, after all, knows from the outset how his mission is going to climax. He's going to suffer unbelievable tortures at the hands of the state. And yet, what's his counsel to the church? Don't worry about tomorrow.
Fear not.
Have no fear. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Don't worry about things. And when that church goes out into the world, they know from the start, they're warned that what's happened to me is going to happen to you. This is, expect to be persecuted is what Jesus says.
Yeah.
And yet, here's what Peter writes to a church that is literally being used by Nero to light his gardens.
Human torches in his party palace.
Took Christians and literally tied them to poles and wrapped them in oily rags and then set them on fire. And that was just one of the many fiendish ways that the enemies of Christians really persecuted Christians. Yeah. Last Christmas, the big persecution was Starbucks was selling coffee in red cups.
Only red.
That was it's the end of all things,
It's the end of life as we know it.
People were treating this like it's a persecution. Worse. Meanwhile, 5 feet away from the red cups, there's Starbucks Christmas blend coffee with the word Christmas on it. And, it's all just such a joke. People get manipulated by these kind of culture war baloney. But here's what Peter says to a church that's really facing persecution. He says, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal," and he means fiery literally, mm-hmm. "which comes upon you to prove you as though something strange were happening to you." But, he says, and he doesn't say, "But build your bunkers and store up your beans and your guns." He says, "But rejoice insofar as you share in Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed." Where's his glory going to be revealed from? His glory is going to be revealed from heaven, where he is going today, Ascension Thursday. "If you are reproached for the name of Christ, you are blessed because the spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. But," and this is his only counsel to the church, "let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or a wrongdoer or a mischief maker. Yet if one suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but under that name let him glorify God." The first pope's counsel to a persecuted church that is getting murdered and all kinds of other things happening to it, his only counsel to us is, be sure you die well.
Yep.
And okay. By that, he means...
all your anxiety on him, or he cares for you.
Don't worry. And Jesus says this, do not worry about those who kill the body. Worry about those who can kill the soul.
Yeah.
Worry about those who can kill body and soul in hell, and that's the great danger that we face. And so, it's a far greater, you know, even if Hillary were Nero, the biggest problem still confronting us as Catholics is not the danger to the body. The biggest problem confronting us as Catholics is saying, you know, I don't see anything. I'm in favor of war crimes if it'll keep my skin safe. I am in favor of spitting in the faces of POWs.
Turning the sand to glass.
I'm in favor of, anything to keep my skin safe. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Peter and Jesus warn about, is not the threat to the body. The threat is and always has been the threat to the soul through temptation to sin.
And if we're having hysteria over a political election, we're in the wrong place in our hearts.
Right.
Because that does not come from God.
Right.
It does not come from God. So it requires a little examination, that kind of fear and like you say, the preparing for the worst. It's like, you know, we're supposed to be wise as serpents, gentle as lambs. That doesn't mean be stupid, but to be consumed with fear, bunkerizing your house and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That, you know, God does not, that kind of worry and hysteria and fretting and hand-wringing, that does not come from God. That's not the fruit of the Spirit.
Exactly.
And what we see in history, all throughout history, is peace. The martyrs went to their deaths in, you know, singing hymns.
Right.
And I mean, I love Miguel Pro. Father mm-hmm. Pro was killed by the Mexican authorities. It's the first martyrdom we have photographs of.
Mm, and really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is. He stood up straight before the firing squad, straightened his shoulders, and he said in Spanish, "Long live Christ the King," and they shot him to death.
Hmm.
You know, it's like we should be ready for martyrdom, and that martyrdom can come in lots of ways. Hmm. And that's what personally I want to be working on that in my heart. I in the place God wants me in my heart and in my soul, and not being like a little cork floating around on the frenzied ocean waves, like, okay, a Northwest, like where the Columbia River meets the Pacific Ocean. I don't want to be in that water mm-hmm. because of a political election. And I think anybody who's feeling super anxious and anxiety and anger and all of those negative feelings needs to do a serious examination of conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Read the book of first letter of Saint Peter. Just read it. So like five little chapters long.
Take you 10 minutes. You know, it's not that big of a letter.
10 minutes to read it. But if your heart is in super turmoil over this political thing and the way our country is going, it's like, relax and You know, go to confession. Trust God. Go to confession, and do a soul check. Am I anxious and afraid and angry, et cetera, et cetera? Then I'm in the wrong place. You know,
right? And that's, you know, that's what is so striking to me about this letter is Peter, who himself, by the way, is going to be martyred. Peter is going crucified. To be killed by martyr by, but yeah, he's going to be murdered by Nero, and yet. His main counsel, basically, he takes that heavenly view that Peter does. He recognizes that this fight has already been won, that whatever I'm facing now is no different than what Jesus faced, and that the outcome is going to be the same because I've trusted in Jesus. And so I'm going to die some way anyway, so why not be glad that I'm going to actually get a chance to die for Jesus rather than in some stupid car accident, you know, or, you know,
well, I mean, that'd be a donkey accident back then.
It would be a real letdown, I think, for, you know, Peter, who's devoted his whole life to Christ. You know, how did you die? Well, I was changing a light bulb and the ladder fell over and I, you know, hit my head on the sink. What a dumb way to go, right? So
there was this donkey and it T-boned me.
Yeah. So we'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're with Christine Franklin today. We'll be back right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Trap dog!
Yes!
Trap dog! Trap dog was a man. He was a dragon man.
Dragon man.
All right.
And he was just a dragon.
Thank you. Thank you, Ethan Bolin, for reaching deep down inside yourself and finding something that really, really,
really
does a thing that I can't describe in words. But yes. Yes, sure. Absolutely. That was, of course, the immortal Strong Bad singing for us the Ballad of Trogdor. Before we went to break, we've been talking about the ascension, why the ascension matters. What the ascension does is it reminds us that that the human race is not going to heaven. The human race is already there. Person of Jesus. And in a kind of a down payment to the church in the person of the Blessed Virgin Mary, who has already been granted the redemption of the body, the glorified body. And the reason that Jesus gives this gift to Mary, and by the way, notice the distinction. There's the ascension of Jesus, but the assumption of Mary. What's the difference? Well, the ascension speaks to the fact that Jesus rises, if you will, on his own steam because he's God. But Mary is raised up, so she is the recipient of an act of grace. She is assumed. She doesn't climb out of the grave because she's a goddess. She is taken into heaven because she's the first and most saved person in the world. And so all of that is pointing to us, though, about our heavenly destiny, and it urges us to, as Paul says, to put on the mind of Christ, to think with big picture thinking. About where you are in the universe and what your status is. And so Paul tells us that we, through our baptism, are already seated with Christ in heaven. We are seated at the right hand of the Father, says Paul, because we've already received that gift of salvation. And so as we face, you know, whatever our tribulations are, as we all do, that's the reality of where we are. And so we can be grateful to God. The trials that we're facing are shares in the trials of Christ. They're not just random garbage that happens for no reason. They are in the providence of God. The things that are being granted to us, both the trials and also the joys and blessings, are all gifts of grace to us. And they're given by God. They're allowed by God so that we can become more like Christ. That is a terrible compliment. C.S. Lewis speaks about the awful compliment that God pays us in permitting us to share, among other things, in the sufferings of Christ. And some of those sufferings are terrible sufferings. And so I'm not trying to be, all sort of happy, clappy, happy face. There are people who are going through hell right now for various reasons. And yet the good news is that Christ is there with them, that Christ has been in that hell himself. And the good news is that there is the other side. There is the fact that, as Paul puts it, our light and transitory sufferings are leading to the life of God, the life of Christ, and the joy of the resurrection, and that God will get us there. And that's the good news of the Ascension, is that where Christ has gone, we will go. You, before we went to the break, though, there was something you wanted to mention.
Oh, I just said, sometimes Christians are Christianity is accused of being a pie in the sky by and by. In other words, it's just this fantasy to keep us going through the troubles of life and to not be really involved in the world that we live in. Mm-hmm. And I also grew up in a fundamentalist sect, and they did not believe in participating in the political life at all, mainly because they thought Jesus was going to return to earth and rapture all the believers very, very soon, like next week. So politics was kind of like, that's none of that matters. And so, as Catholics, we don't take the view that pie and the sky by and by. It's like, oh, because we trust in the Lord, because we look forward and hope in heaven, that means we have nothing to do on earth. It's not one or the other. Mm-hmm. So that was just as Catholics, we have a responsibility to our community, to help the poor. We have a lot of Christian responsibilities in the here and now, but that doesn't take away the fact that we look forward to, we have the hope of heaven and the next life and a new birth in Christ, a heavenly birthday.
Yeah, and that really is true. This is not just sort of pious goo. that the Ascension really is given to it. Jesus could have, having been raised from the dead, he could have done any number of things to end his earthly appearances on earth. I mean, he could have just said bye and disappeared. Or whatever, there's all kinds of things that he could have done. There are all kinds of choices he could have made. Why does he make the choice that he makes to leave us in this way? Well, there's all kinds of imagery, of course, in what Jesus does, in ascending into heaven, rather than simply just vanishing. He's telling us something by that gesture. He's offering, as he always does, this sort of image, this sacramental sign, if you will. Because what does the sky speak to us of? There's a famous story where, a Russian cosmonaut went into space and said, well, I looked around, I can't see God anywhere. Right. And there are people who have this notion that, early Christians believed that Jesus, lived in the sky and et cetera, et cetera. Actually, of course, the first time that this is really put forward as somebody is saying, somebody seriously puts forward the theory that Jesus, you know, really lives in a decorated chair somewhere in the sky, the church says that's not the point, right? We're not going to talk about that. But yeah. what we do believe, of course, is that there is an entire other order of existence, what the Christian tradition calls the new heaven and the new earth. That if you believe in bodily resurrection, you necessarily have to believe in an environment for that body to be in. What that will look like, we have no idea, of course. It will be, if it's anything like the resurrection, it will be related to, but not the same as, the natural order that we've seen here. But the good news of it, and the reason for the ascension, is because the ascension speaks, of course, of hope, of rising above. Christian hope, and it's amazing how often this gets forgotten. Christian hope is not hope for the future. Christian hope is for eternity. The future, lest we forget, is that time when everyone we know and love will be dead.
We'll be moldering in the grave.
Right. Americans have this great, we've always had this intense belief in the future that tomorrow's going to be better than today. And this is in our DNA. I mean, we've always looked at this. But the Christian tradition, although it certainly says, you know, the future, we're to work for the future and, think about provision for our children and prudently doing things. So medieval cathedrals were built, and along with them, the medievals, you know, those dumb medievals who thought that Jesus was going to come back tomorrow because they didn't know anything and they were so stupid. Those medievals also planted great groves of oak trees that they knew were going to be needed in 700 years in order to replace the oak beams in the cathedrals. These were people who took far more provision for the future than we do. You know, we're busy, you know, fracking and destroying our ecosystem and so on and so forth because there's no tomorrow, while at the same time telling ourselves that the future is going to be fantastic. What the church tells us to do is live prudently in the present for the sake of the future, but don't put your hope in the future. Put your hope in eternity. Put your hope
and certainly don't spend a bunch of time worrying about the future, because
yes!
It's a fantasy. The thing in my head that I think of as the future is just a fantasy, because right. I cannot know the future.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a heart attack by the time this radio show is over.
Yeah, or get struck by a donkey. You just don't know. It could come at any time. But yeah. And so when we worry about the future, that doesn't come from God,
right?
Because it's just a fantasy.
Right. Right. And so we live in what the Catholic tradition calls the sacrament of the present moment, which is why Jesus says, don't worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow isn't real. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
What's real is right now. What's happening right now. And this is, of course, also why the church has always said, do not do evil that good may come of it. Speaking of not voting for Donald Trump.
Abraham Lincoln.
We will be back tomorrow. I'll be talking to Tom Allen tomorrow, a friend of mine. Till then, I want to thank you, Christine, for being on the show.
Yeah.
Ethan Bolin, I want to thank you so much for being our producer. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots on Breadbox Media. Bye-bye.